Hello and welcome to episode number 369 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Have to say, I'm still on that high from last week's show. Just getting to talk about something so exceptional. I feel like we could just do round two this week, because there's just so much to cover. Yeah, with House of Usher, but as is the, I guess, the forward momentum of this show is that we always have to keep moving forward. So, you know, we don't get time to just look back and linger in it. Like, I could have spent a month just on that show alone. But there's other stuff to talk about. There's other TV shows. There's other films. Pretty big film just come out that we'll be discussing shortly.
I did have a moment, though, when I was on my Netflix and just seeing House of Usher, like, especially with it being the spooky season right now, and I was like,
start it again.
Damn, I've seen it all. I was like, god damn it, like, I wish it was still there for me to watch.
I know, I'm like, how crazy is it to just rewatch it instantly? I know you were doing that with The Last of Us weekly, and I feel like this is another one of those shows that is just that good. It, you know, you wouldn't get sick of it, I don't think.
I will never do a TV show like I did.
You were crazy.
Last of Us, because, like, even like, because like, I've been enjoying Chucky, and like, because I know there's so finite, I have been tempted to watch like the odd episode again, and I'm like, nah, let's not be silly. Whereas Last of Us, one of them I watched like 7 times.
Yeah,
I literally just watched it every night for that week until the next episode came out.
That is amazing.
Like, that was just, I've never done anything like that. That was a whole nother level of just losing my mind.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was time. It was so good. I know. Like, that, being in it, that is, to me, what is some of my all-time favorite TV experiences. And, like, of course, I'll always go back to Lost. But, like, I remember being in those moments of those great TV shows. And it is something that you miss nowadays with something like House of Usher and Stranger Things, where, like, you know, we kind of watch it in different times. And we get to talk about it, of course. But having that weekly event, when it's worthy of that, and The Last of Us absolutely was. Like, I could not imagine if they just said, like, oh yeah, there's 5 episodes to watch. Like, I'd have to force myself to contain it and only watch like at a minimum one a day, because I'd need to savor it that much. But yeah, such a good time. But yeah, going into the news this week, this first one's pretty interesting. And luckily, we do get to keep talking about Mike Flanagan. But this is his new project. Of course, he's returning, finally, after about 5 years away by the time this comes out, back to the film world, adapting a Stephen King short story called The Life of Chuck. And there's basically a full cast out there now that he's announced. So some of these we may have talked about before, and then there's kind of a few more that have been added. But just to go over them quickly, because there's a lot, and I'm not going to go over all of them. But the sort of main cast is Chiwetel Ejiofor, Karen Gillan, who was last in Oculus. So this is like a long time coming to her be back in a Mike Flanagan project. Jacob Tremblay, who's been in loads of them. Tom Hiddleston. Oh, yes, that was it. So I think the first two that we got for this was Tom Hiddleston and Mark Hamill. I remember talking about that in the news, and yeah, they're both in this. But then recently, we also got a couple of definitely horror legends in the form of one, Matthew Lillard, who we'll actually get to talk about shortly for this week's film, and then also Heather Langenkamp. So he's bringing, of course, he's bringing his Wes Craven legends into fold. And yeah, there's a whole host of names here, kind of just glanced at it now. We've got David Dastmalchian, who's amazing. We've got Kate Siegel, of course. We've got Carl Lumbly as well, which is amazing. Samantha Sloyer and Rahul Kohli. So a lot of the names that you'd expect, and some new ones as well, which is always good. It's crazy how many people they announce, really. There's about 20 names there, which, like, again, this is a short story. And the little I know about it is it kind of tells the story of like one man's life over like multiple different time periods. It's one of those beginning in reverse, so told in reverse, beginning with his death and then going back to his childhood. So it sounds Flanagan-esque. This cast list is filled with names that we adore, and of course it's Mike Flanagan making a film, so is there anything else to say other than fuck yeah, inject it?
Yeah, no, that's awesome. But I'm really glad that Heather Langenkamp is back in the Flanagan project, because obviously, you know, her being in, you know, my least favorite kind of project of his.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that it was, the worry was that he wouldn't bring her into his returning cast, but you know, now she's announced again, so that's awesome. Obviously getting Hamill again is sick as well, so like I'm really happy with those two. Obviously there's the people that are like given at this point, where I'm like, you know, I'm not going to get excited for Kate because I know that she's going to be there, but I should because she's always incredible. And you know, there's probably like half a dozen of people like that where I'm like, oh, they're just amazing and they're going to be in his project, so I'm greedy that I then just get excited by the other announcements.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. even seeing names like Carl Lumley in there and definitely Samantha Sloyan as well. Like, she obviously was great in House of Usher, but like still think of her in Midnight Mass and how amazing she was. So yeah, this is fantastic. Like I say, this is easily one to keep our eyes peeled for. And there's so many like big films to look forward to. So very, very exciting. Moving on to the next one, actually, a big film that just got announced in the last few days. This is huge news. I never thought this would happen. This is kind of insane, really, because the movie It Follows, which is I think a modern day masterpiece. I really do. I think it was like the best of those movies that came out just before we started doing the show. Is you know, one of the most original horror films I've ever seen, and kind of is in that bracket of the absolute elite that we've covered for the podcast for me. And it's so cool. And so yeah, they are finally doing a sequel, so called They Follow, and it will be David Robert Mitchell, who was the writer and director. He is returning for this film, and the film will star the returning Micah Monroe, who of course we've seen in many films since then, and she's been exceptional in everything, including this year probably her best performance in God Is a Bullet. So wonderful news. Like, I think this is one of those ones where if you'd asked me when I just saw It Follows, do you want a sequel? I'd have said absolutely not. Like, this is a perfect one and done that does not need to be touched. And I would have felt that way for a long time. But I think now, this will be a decade next year since this come out, and I'm way more open to an idea of a sequel. I think it's cool that like he's waited this amount of time. He's gone off and made other stuff, and now he's revisiting this breakout hit. So I think, and it also shows that he must have like a reason to do it. You know, if They Follow comes out 2 years after It Follow, that very much feels like a sequel cash grab. I don't think he's doing that 10 years later. I think this is he wants to make a sequel to his film. So yeah, how do you feel, I guess, overall about not only there being a sequel to It Follows, but were you in the same category as me, or were you kind of more open to the idea of a sequel?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've both said, you know, multiple times on the podcast that it's a great standalone movie. But as with everything, you know, the right script comes along and the right idea, then I'm down for it because it's a fantastic movie. So, you know, our lead is announced, our director's back at the helm. So, you know, it's not just one of these cash in, sequels with brand new cast and, people, you know, behind and in front of the camera. And yeah, I'm just hopeful that, like you, the director has a great idea for this, hence why it's taken a decade to come back to it. You know, I think back to, like, Don't Breathe, when I'm like, you know,
I was just thinking really, about that as well.
You know, and it felt like it was a cash-in, you know, and it was like, was it a good movie, Don't Breathe 2? You know, yeah, it was all right, but, like, Don't Breathe is incredible, and would Don't Breathe just be better as a standalone movie than having this second movie? And I'm like, don't get me wrong, you know, you can still just watch this one movie, but, you know, now we're talking about it being part of, you know, having a sequel. It does just pull it down a little bit to me, you know, that I'm like, you know, and I remember, like, Happy Death Day was similar, you know, and where these, like, incredible just standalone unique movies come out, and then these sequels come out quite quick and they do sully it a bit. And so yeah, my hope is that it just doesn't do that.
Yeah, I completely agree with all those points. I think both those movies are perfect examples. Like, Don't Breathe is the one that I was thinking of throughout this whole thing, where You watch something that's so original, but it's such a huge breakout hit, and it has such easy franchise potential with the characters. So it was kind of obvious they would do a sequel, even I didn't want it. And then, yeah, it's just because it's so quick. Like I say, if it had been a decade on from Don't Breathe, I would have been more open to the idea, and I think everyone would. But, yeah, this is cool. Like I say, if it comes out and it's just, like, terrible, then obviously that's unfortunate. But I don't think it will change, like, the legacy of It Follows. Whereas, like I say, if you do it 2 years after, it can do.
And because it was the same director for Happy Death Day,
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, because obviously with Don't Breathe, it was different.
Yeah.
Because that's obviously, you know, I was thinking of the other side of that, which was Quiet Place, where it was like, you know, we did not want a sequel to The Quiet Place. We were like, very much, that's a perfect movie.
Yeah.
And now we got the sequel, and we're like, you know, we've heard nothing about this third movie.
Yeah.
In such a long time. I'm like, God damn it, we need it so badly after the end of the second one.
Yeah, well, we've just got the spin-off one coming, haven't we, next year, and that's it at the minute.
Yeah, but even that, like, we just heard very little about.
Yeah, I think it is coming next summer.
I assume it's still there, yeah.
But yeah, I'm completely with you. Like, they did exactly what The Last of Us did, where it was like this perfect thing that didn't need to be touched. They touched it and did an amazing sequel, but now that second part absolutely warrants a third part. And so now we are in this weird predicament where if we don't get these part threes, it is going to sully the overall thing. And like I say, that's not to say that, I mean, The Last of Us Part 2 is exceptional, but like, we need a part three after that. And the same, A Quiet Place is like outrageous how, in my opinion, it ends on such a major cliffhanger. It's why it's crazy that I've never rewatched that film. Like, saw it once at the cinema and thought it was fantastic, but like, I don't think I want to relive that right now, knowing that I'm going to watch a movie that has a fairly unsatisfying ending right now. Yeah, very, very excited for this one that's got announced. This next one's another sort of new film. Just a quick one here. So this just had its premiere at the BFI London Film Festival. New horror film called Starve Acre. And it's kind of been acquired for distribution and stuff, seemingly for next year. Now, typically this would be one on my radar because it is a sort of folk horror film, a British one, which can be good, but they're not, I wouldn't say they're like our favorite wheelhouse. No. There is the two leads of this one is immediately like, well, we're definitely going to watch this because these are two people that we very much enjoy, which is it is Matt Smith. Do you want to guess the other one?
I just knew it. He's in everything.
Do you want to guess who else would be in an indie British horror film?
Richard Brake.
No, it's a female.
Oh, I don't know.
It's Morfydd Clark.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, so straight away, I seen those two names. I was like, well, we have to see this. But yeah, it's got a quick synopsis. I'm not actually going to go over it because it's quite wordy, but it is just like what you'd expect of a folk type film. So it wasn't, reading the synopsis, it didn't grab me. But it's got, you know, it had a really good reception and to the point where it's been picked up by all these big distribution companies for next year. It's always nice to see these British films as well doing well. And obviously with that cast, it makes it watch. So yeah, keep our eyes peeled for Starve Acre.
I'm very glad that Moyford isn't just like bogged down waiting for Lord of the Rings, you know. It's
that's a good point. Yeah,
you know, that something like that, as huge as Lord of the Rings is, it's kind of like she ain't gotta do shit.
No,
like even though there is this downtime, you know, it's the biggest TV show on the planet. So like, just like in terms of budget, like, you know, she's good. So it's nice that she can just like have this freedom and go, yeah, I'm gonna do some, you know, indie British movies while I wait for this behemoth to come back.
That's the thing as well that you just said, like, it's good that she has that freedom, because that would be my one worry if she's like the lead on this mega show that has so many spinning plates and, like I say, has this insane budget, that I assume they would have contracts that would mean like, look, you've now signed on to this, and if it's a success, you've signed on to X amount of seasons, and we just need you whenever we need you. I'm glad that she's, you know, maybe this was just like a very small project that she was able to fit in, which is great, because yeah, this could have easily just been like a 5-week shoot, you know, and that could be like on the level of a St. Maud type film. So yeah, very, very happy about that. And this last one's just a very small one, as it sort of leads leads us into this week's film, because yeah, Five Nights at Freddy's, doing insane. Unsurprisingly, I'd say, I think this is a long time coming. Like, my only question was whether or not they'd hit the wave of Five Nights at Freddy's a bit too late. Because obviously,
this franchise, and the on-demand release.
Yeah, that's so weird. Like, now, as we know, go into this, like, I don't understand why this is on Peacock in the States, because it's doing tremendously well. Over the weekend, it made 78 million domestically, and 130 million worldwide over the weekend. So with a budget of 20 million, this has already made its money back and then some. So it's like a pretty much guaranteed a sequel. And then a few of the kind of records it broke. This is the biggest Blumhouse global opening of all time, which beat Halloween in 2018.
Wow.
It's also the highest grossing opening weekend for a Blumhouse film. So that's the same thing. The highest opening ever for a PG-rated horror film, surpassing The Mummy Returns. The biggest original horror opening of 2023, and the second biggest horror opening, just behind The Nun 2. That's crazy that The Nun 2 did that well. I'm assuming that's just domestic. Also,
I just vomited a little bit then.
Yeah, it's also the highest domestic opening for the Halloween weekend ever. So not in genre or anything, just the most amount of money a film has made in the States over a Halloween weekend, beating Puss in Boots record.
I know that great
great Halloween film. And then lastly, the biggest domestic horror movie opening weekend of the year, beating Scream 6. There's a couple. This is an insane one. The third largest domestic opening ever for a horror film, behind It and It Chapter 2. So this is killing it. And specifically,
this is not doing well. This is like insanity.
Yeah, this is record breaking. All of these things, like, it's going to be arguably the biggest Blumhouse film ever, certainly for a horror film. Now it's beating all these records, and it's crazy. And obviously they're going to get that bump. Like, Halloween's going to continue into the next weekend and stuff. So I think it's easily going to be like the highest grossing horror movie of the year. And there's been some big ones. Like, we've had a lot of hits this year. Like, The Nun 2 was a hit financially. Obviously Scream did really well. There's been a few others as well. So it's like horror has done. Oh, The Exorcist made like over 100 million. Like, it didn't make its 500 million or whatever they paid for the rights, which is absurd. But in terms of a film, it did fantastically.
That's the problem. They needed Marvel numbers.
Exactly. Yeah, like Marvel numbers from 5 years ago. Like, not even this year's Marvel numbers. It's a really good time. Like, as you look at it, if you want to get kind of picky about it, and obviously we'll talk about this film, but you say, okay, are the best horror movies of the year being rewarded? Because a lot of them, The Nun and stuff, that aren't even things we're even worried about, you know, covering. And then you see a movie, there was some that haven't done, you know, like Scream's done well, but it hasn't done as well as some of these other ones. On one hand, it's amazing to see horror doing well at the cinema. But if it's, Saw's a great example. But if it is like just The Exorcist and The Nun and stuff, it's like, is that a good reflection or not? And the one thing about this is, I know it's based upon a franchise, which is why it's done so well, but at least it's funny to see it. That is a bit crafty, actually, the more I think about it. The fact that they say it's the biggest original horror opening.
I was going to say, I smirked at that when you read it, because I was like, is it an original horror opening? Like, just because it's not theatrically, like, do we...
It technically is, but it won't beat those records like the one that Jordan Peele had when it was like biggest domestic opening weekend for a non-franchise film.
I guess you just got to use the word non-franchise.
Yeah, because he got that where it was like Avatar was the last one before, like the first Avatar, and then he beat that record. Yeah. So that was insane. And that just makes you realize, like, God, everything is a franchise. Like, we had that conversation at the time where I was like, oh, the only thing I can think of that would be close to that would be talented directors, you know, these auteurs, like a Tarantino movie, a Nolan movie. These aren't typically franchise films almost ever. So that's weird that he was able to beat those as opening. It's absolutely killing it. Should we talk about it?
Yeah, we might as well.
Let's talk about Five Nights at Freddy's.
Thank you.
So yeah, like we said, this is obviously based upon the video game franchise. It's been around for about a decade at this point. Like, it feels old. You know, Five Nights at Freddy's, I remember when it first came out, and kind of really took over the internet for a little while. And it was kind of riding that wave of when YouTube was first taken off and streamers, and it was just like the perfect game at that time. Because it was so easy just to show someone like what it is, you know. You're creeping around this abandoned place. There's going to be these crazy jump scares. And it's wild that this franchise has... I really thought it would have been like a Slender Man, in my opinion, because those were the same to me. And I was always more intrigued by Slender Man just visually. But that was just like a game that came out that had the zeitgeist for about a year and then just disappeared off the face of the planet. And like, that isn't a successful franchise. Whereas this has... over a dozen games at this point. It had new games that came out this year, so this is still still doing big things.
The thing that Five Nights has done weirdly is that it's bled into the, because it's still like popular online stuff, on YouTube and stuff, it's bled into like children's kind of massively horror, even though it's not, you know. And so you go into a toy shop and you see Fortnite toys, you see, you know, all of these other things, you see some of these horror things like Huggy Wuggy and stuff, but then you see Five Nights at Freddy's there, and it's like sold as a toy, like as a kid's toy. And it's like, but these games are proper horror. Well, are horror games, you know. They are 18 rated quite high horror games.
That's what I was thinking. Where I was like, are they? Because I don't know. Because I've never really played one or been interested enough to play one. But yeah, I am curious if like the one that came out this year, for example, like is that 18 rated?
Yeah, I wonder if they've tamed, you know, kind of tamed it down a bit and made it more child friendly. Because I think, you know, there's a line, and you know, we'll talk about that a lot with this movie, really, where so much of what Five Nights at Freddy's is kind of you can get away with, like, this could be an episode of Goosebumps until it decides not to be, you know. And like we've said before, that, like, you know, when we watched Goosebumps back in the day, even though that was meant for kids, how much of that was like quite scarring if you were a child that was scared easily.
Yeah,
but like, I could easily see Five Nights being in that wheelhouse.
So just to clarify, the game that came out in 2021, Security Breach, which I think was one of the last sort of big ones, that was rated 12. Moderate horror, moderate violence, and obviously this movie is rated PG-13 as well. So it's
I wonder what the originals were.
Yeah, I'll have a look about the original. I'm sure that'd be harder to find, because obviously I think that might have just been a digital only game, but I'll have a look.
But yeah, kind of going into the plot of this, basically our lead, Mike, is this. We get a lot of backstory on Mike, I'm not going to lie, in this movie. But basically we find out that he has got this troubled past where his brother gets kidnapped almost in front of him, and almost that he blames himself for his brother's kidnapping. And we kind of cut to him as an adult, and he's troubled and can't keep a job and is looking after his young sister, and lands a job as a security guard at the defunct Freddy's Pizzeria, whatever it's called, where the Freddy and his gang are these kind of, I mean, I'm sure you know what the gimmick is, you know, these characters, these children's characters. I was trying to think, is it Chuck E. Cheese, that sort of thing?
Yeah,
these American kind of animatronic characters in these little restaurants in kind of, you know, middle America, that we just don't really, you know, we can't really relate to them over here. We've only ever seen this sort of stuff in movies.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by it, and it is surprising that there's never been like a British equivalent to Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, exactly. These gimmick restaurants where they have these characters, you know, and it's like we have them at theme parks, but we don't have them at restaurants like this. And basically he is given the task to be the security guard for this place overnight, why the fuck this place needs a security guard overnight is beyond me, but it does, and he's been given the job. The robots don't want to stay still, and spookiness begins to happen.
Mm.
I mean, it's weird because I played a little bit of like one of the games. I think I played like the original one and like a little bit, and there was like four or five levels, and you have to look at the cameras and find certain things without getting jump scared, basically. And it was quite random whether you get jump scared or not, and I just found it like annoying, where I was like, god damn it, I do the same thing and it, you just get got. But a lot of it was on the cameras, and a lot of it was kind of these jump scares and movements and, you know, on the cameras, etc. And this movie doesn't do that. Like, it's quite brash and in your face that these characters are moving, whether they're moving on their own free will, whether they've got a spirit, what the hell's going on, or whether they're just, you know, the animatronics coming to life. You know, the movie starts to unpack, but the machines move in front of people quite openly throughout most of this movie.
Yeah,
which I wasn't expecting going into it.
Mm.
You know, I thought it was going to be more subtle, and I thought it was going to be more, you know, like we get with Chucky, or Megan, and that, well, not Megan so much because she is just all moving and all talking, but, you know, like Chucky and that sort of thing, where it's kind of, you know, they might talk to one character, but then to everyone else, they're these lifeless, non-moving things. And especially, you know, I thought they'd play into the security cameras more and that sort of thing. And I do wonder whether just the modern Five Nights at Freddy's games have moved away from what I know the original to be.
Yeah, I think they have.
Yeah, where it's just more about these characters that are, you know, 50-50, like, cute-looking kids characters and really fucking creepy. Mm. You know, and they toe the line of that really well. And I think that's why they've kind of stood for so long, these characters, because they do just perfectly toe that line of, like, this could easily just be a kid's toy that is completely fine.
Mm.
Or it could be like a crazy horror thing. And you know, the design is very good on them. I guess the only other thing is the kind of most notable cast member is the legend that is Matthew Lillard.
Mm.
Who,
I didn't recognize him initially.
I didn't, because I knew he was in this. Yes, and I was, like, waiting for him to get into this. And
you hear him talking, and I didn't recognize his voice at all.
No, that was the thing that was most unrecognizable, is like his voice was very different, you know. And yeah, he is basically a counselor for Mike, and suggests to him or says to him he knows of this job and suggests that he takes it. Mm. So he is kind of the counselor and the guy that gets him the job at the Freddy's pizzeria.
Mm.
I mean, what did you think of Five Nights at Freddy's?
Not much, to be honest. It just wasn't for me. Like, I'm going to try and keep it short.
Who was it for?
Well, it's for children. To put it quite, you know, bluntly, there was a moment about halfway through the film where I had that realization, and I was like, I don't know why I'm watching this. And I feel like this was just one of those opportune moments that we got caught in the crosshairs of a fandom and a community and a huge thing that just isn't for us. And because it is technically a new horror film, we then fall into that category of it should be for us, but it's absolutely not for us. This is a very, you know, a fan base which is loyal to this IP and loves it at this point, and clearly shows up time and time again for the games and this film. was a success. Clearly. But it is children based. Like, I just quickly did have a look, and yeah, it's always been 12 rated since the start, right. Which does make a lot of sense now, especially when you talk about the merch and that, because I was like, man, that's crazy. Like you say, how they have so much children's merch for this game. It's like, it can't be, you know, rated like a Call of Duty game. Like, that would just be insane. And so, yeah, it makes a lot of sense why it is.
I don't get it.
Like, some of the characters that are in Fortnite is insane to me, but that is a whole other kettle of fish.
Also, like I say, I played that first game, and I do remember it being spooky, you know, and it's not.
But it is interesting. Like, how do you rate a jump scare?
Exactly. Because, and I think that's the genius of it, because it is just, you know, Freddy jumping up, and it's not Freddy Krueger. It's this Freddy, and, you know, it's just a bear jumping out in front of you multiple times in dark, scary-ish places, you know, but you put a light on it, and it's like, it's just a bear in a restaurant.
Exactly, and it was, and like I say, if it didn't pop up, if it was fully lit and it wasn't doing all these things, like, it would just be something so normal. But like I say, it doesn't have violence and gore or anything like that, so... Yeah, it's just, that was my realization watching this. And I've always known that this is, in my opinion, for children. And it's kind of one of those gateway horrors. And it seems like a very good one. But it just isn't for me. And I think so, that aside is like, that's why I didn't enjoy myself watching this film at all. And I'm sure plenty of people will, like the target audience, but I'm just not that. But kind of talking about the actual film, like, The setup I found to be painfully boring. You know, we talked a lot about films that this year that aren't even good films that had really good setups, really good characters, and really good acting. Like, The Exorcist had that and is a terrible horror film. The Boogeyman had that, and I didn't think that was a good horror film. The new Insidious had that, and I didn't think that was a good horror film. Like, that's typically the thing that even the bad films get right, is, like, the good drama, good setup. And we talk time and time again about how we're so lucky to get consistently amazing acting performances. And this almost like took me down to earth, and it made me like appreciate what we have more, because I just didn't think anything about the characters or the performances were good in this film at all. And I've seen the lead three people in this film all in other stuff and all been good, so I know that it's not the actor's fault, but I thought the performances were terrible throughout the whole thing. And I think it is just because there's shit dialogue. There's a complete lack of characters, for starters. You know, everyone is so one-dimensional. Like, you see those final act turns a mile away because there isn't anything else to their character. You know, it's like, why else is this famous actor playing this one terrible character? It's like, well, he's obviously going to come back in some important capacity. So there wasn't any sort of intrigue or mystery and anything like that. I thought Mike as a lead character was one of the worst lead characters I've seen probably this year. Like, he is just so dull and dry, and he's just one of these dudes that's just kind of moping through life and miserable. And we then get this kind of bolted on backstory that has sort of no emotion to it whatsoever. What I will say is, like, the only interesting part I found in this film for me was that concept of him forcing himself going into these dreams and trying to relive this traumatic memory to try and gather more information about what happened. And I was like, man, that would make an awesome film. Like, if that was what you... Yeah, well, like, I was thinking of, like, a Nolan-esque thriller, like, early Nolan, like a Memento, where it is, like, he's this crazy dude who he hates being awake because those are wasted seconds where he can't be working out what's happening. So, yeah, it's, like, the inverse of Nightmare on Elm Street, where it's a character that constantly wants to be asleep and is constantly going insane, you know, racking their brains trying to figure out this memory, and they're misremembering things, and then they can't tell if their memory's playing tricks on them. I'm like, God, that's so cool. And that is not what we got here. Like, that is just a setup, which is cool. Like, the first time he goes into the dream and it's adult him reliving this childhood memory, I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then we just kept seeing it and nothing was really happening, and I was like, oh God, this is not good. So I didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy the setup, which takes about 30 minutes until we get to, you're a security guard now, and your job is to look after these crazy things, and now some mad shit's going to happen. And then, yeah, just it very much devolved into what I thought it would be, which is just a, you know, jump scare-a-thon, which again is what the franchise is. So the people that want that are going to love it. But we don't like that typically in horror films. And I certainly didn't like it in this film. Some of the jump scares, particularly this like bobblehead one, was like one of the most egregious things I've ever seen in a film, to the point where it almost won me over by the end. Because the first time it happens, it's one of the first jump scares that gets Mike on his first day at the job, is he opens a locker and the sight of a bobblehead makes him jump out of his skin. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, you're fucked, mate. Like, if that's what the level that will scare you, you're so screwed. And they keep using it. They do it at least three more times in the film. But by the end of it, I was like, okay, this is almost funny, because it's the shittest thing I've ever seen used for a jump scare in a film. It's just a bobblehead. It's just a normal bobblehead. Like, if you're scared of that, people must get scared every time they enter any room with any sort of foreign object, because it's just something so normal. It was so bizarre to me.
That's the thing, like, you know, are you just getting scared by lamps and stuff at this point?
Anything.
Like, just a bottle of water on the side, you know, whoa, shit, what's that? Yeah. I don't trust it. Like,
I know, that's exactly how I felt. It was just so weird. It's just the horror didn't work for me. And then once we're getting to like, okay, we've now got the moving parts, we've now got like why his daughter's in this, how she's gonna get involved with this place, and I just tapped out. Like, I didn't care at that point. So even though there was some cool like animatronics and shit, even though it was like, I was surprised how much it was CG. It was like, I would say it's probably 90% CG, which was surprising to me. It was very rare that we got a physical thing in this film, and it's like that to me is weird, because it's so easy to do like good animatronics. Like, we saw it in Willy's Wonderland, which for me was just a better version of this. Like, that had enough of what I thought Five Nights was as a franchise, but still delivered a fun film. And I still don't think that film's that great, but it was what I would take from the franchise and make into a better film. Whereas I think this is almost a amazing adaptation. I think it's like incredibly faithful, seemingly, for the little knowledge I have. And I was really curious, because I finished this watching it last night and I really didn't like it. And I did have a quick look to see what the reaction was. And it is exactly what you'd expect, where like critics fucking hate this film. But the audiences that have gone to see it, which is obviously if you're going to see a Five Nights movie that weekend, you're a Five Nights fan, they absolutely love it. Like, this is perfect for them. So I'm sure, like, in the cinema, people were screaming at all the jump scares and having a joyous old time. And so I know that I sound like old man shouting at cloud with this film, which is why I'm going to try and move on quickly. But yeah, I did not enjoy this film. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I think I watched it in a good way, which was in two parts. And I really enjoyed the second half of the movie after not liking the first half of the movie. Well, I say really enjoyed. I enjoyed the second half of the movie.
It's definitely better. Yeah, I wish I'd have done that.
Because the first half is painfully slow, because we get so much of this backstory. And I agree with you that, like, they've built this lore of this character of Mike and this him trying to go into this dream world, and, like, the fact that he takes like posters to work to then like look at them to then get back into that dream state. All of that in a different movie could be super interesting and could be a really cool plot point. But I knew it was just fodder in this. Like, I knew it was going to be fodder, because all we care about is Five Nights guys running around. Like, it's all we fucking care about. So let's just get to it. And so when we spent 45 minutes literally outside of Freddy's Pizzeria, like with Mike in this dream stuff, I just didn't care, because I was like, I know ultimately it's not really going to mean that much. And they do weave it into the finale and weave it into the plot a lot, but it's just, it's not what people are going to this movie for. And like you said, the people that walked out of this movie that having a great time, they didn't go, oh, Mike and his dream sequences and his brother and going into that, that was cool, weren't it? They'd go, oh yeah, animatronics were cool to see, even if they are in CG, like they're cool. So, you know, I found that weird that they kind of put that much in. And yeah, it did bore me because I knew it wasn't going to give me anything that I wanted. And so I just wanted to see the shit that I knew I was going to get from this. And when I got that, I found it enjoyable. And I found this movie incredibly strange because I agree for you that this is kind of meant for kids. But then they in a couple of scenes, very similar to Megan, we had a very similar conversation, you know, and there's a couple of scenes in this movie where they push it a little too far.
Yeah.
And that's why it's got a 15 over in England, you know, and it just shows how much they give zero shits outside of America certification.
Absolutely. Because
this movie would make way more money in England if it's a 12, but that way more money in England is insignificant compared to the American box office.
Yeah, but, you know, this was PG-13. That's all that matters.
Exactly, but it's insane that this is a 15 because it does cut out like so much of it. And like I know that UK cinemas are literally for the first time in years being strict on like ID and stuff for this movie.
Right.
To try to like, you know, cinemas have said, like, we will be IDing for this, like, you know, multiple times. And it's like, when did they ever do that?
Mm.
Like, could a 10-year-old got into Saw? Like, probably pretty easy, you know? But it seems like a 10-year-old would struggle to get into this because they're being quite strict with it.
Mm.
And it's just kind of, it's just kind of farcical. And I think they did just cock it up where, you know, when Goosebumps came out, the Jack Black one, and it was like, oh, no, this is clearly a kid's horror movie. And don't get me wrong, that is tonally very different and zany and everything else. But it's like, yeah, we're not just going to throw in like a bloody decapitation in this. And I feel like with Five Guys, I know it's closer to Five Guys. Five Nights at Freddy's. Oh, man, I want a Five Guys now. you know, I know this is much more horror than what the Jack Black Goosebumps was trying to be. But I just felt like they pushed it too far at times. And, like, I wanted them to go, you know, full on Willy's Wonderland. But they should have toned it back. You know, they either had to just go crazy with it and give me something more that I want. But why would they give me what I want when I'm not a diehard fan? So what they should have done was scale it back more and just made it more universally. But I guess the PG-13 has paid the dividend that they need.
That is so good. That's a really good point, though. Like, I didn't know that, and because I knew it was just PG-13. And obviously, yeah, we've talked about this all the time, that, like, rated R, for example, in America, we could get that as a 15 or an 18. And like I say, those two rage ratings really don't mean jack shit over here in terms of difference. Whereas, yeah, like the idea that there is going to be so many kids in the UK that will love this franchise, that will want to go see it, and that's the only way to see it right now is go to the cinema, and they're not able to. And like I say,
yeah, Scream 4 was a 15.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, it is. Also, that is a very harsh rating, because I get that there's probably, like, God, I mean, there is, I say you could cut 5 seconds from this film and you'd have the easiest 12A ever. Like, there's like two kills that, and they don't even go that hard. It's just because there's a bit of blood where the kill happens off screen and you kind of see the aftermath just after it with quite a bit of blood from the animatronics.
Yeah, and there's a scene where you see some dead bodies as well, like after they've been killed. And yeah, like I said, there's just a couple of cuts like that, because I think then this would be a really good gateway horror movie, you know. But I think with those, you do have to, like, if you're a parent thinking, do I let my, you know, younger child watch this? It's like, it does become a difficult conundrum, because there's a lot of tonally spooky stuff, but the actual content, bar than, yeah, maybe 20 seconds, is actually, like, not violent, you know, not anything that horrific.
Yeah, now knowing the age ratings of the game, that's exactly the bracket that I would have put this after watching it. This film, I would have said between the ages of like 12 and 16. That, like, that's that gateway age, yeah. You know, when you're then going to start watching stuff, and then you, and then you're going to grow out of it and then start watching like proper horror. But like, yeah. Yeah, that is the exact, you know, gap that I would put that. And so that is wild to me that, yeah, they just in this territory, like I say, they clearly don't care because they've just said nope. Because like I say, I just don't. 15 is, that's wild to me, but yeah, carry on.
Yeah, no, it's wild to me too. And so yeah, like I enjoyed the Freddy stuff to a point, but I was the same where I was like, I've seen Willy's Wonderland that I enjoyed way more, and I still didn't love that movie. And with this one, it was like, okay, this was, you know, it was cool seeing these characters, you know, seeing these kind of animatronic characters that I've known for so long, even though I've not been that familiar with the games, you just see them all the time, don't you?
Yeah.
The last decade. Like I said, you know, seeing them in toy shops and everything else, it's like, yeah, I kind of got a pop to see them, but ultimately, you know, it didn't feed me what I wanted, because obviously it wasn't for me. And then when we got to the finale, I did get a pop out of what they did, just because I'm me and I'm going to get a pop out of it, even though it's fucking low hanging fruit. I don't care. Especially there was one line in particular that was said, and I proper popped for it. And I was like, oh, you bastard, you put that in specifically for me.
Yeah, they definitely didn't get me. That just reminded me where I was like, yeah, keep this shit out of the new Screams, I beg of you.
Yeah, but I think that's what was great about it, because it did me, where it gave me a pop, but also I was like, I'm glad I'm getting it here and not in a Scream movie. I was like, I wish it was a better movie, but still... But yeah, like I didn't have a terrible time. I had a terrible time with the first half. I found it very slow and boring. But the breaking it up into two parts, if I was just to review the second half of this movie, I'd be like, yeah, I had a pretty good time. Like it moves along, and you know, I got to see what I wanted to see, and maybe this should be an hour long movie.
Yeah,
because it's quite long. What is it, an hour and 50?
Yeah.
You know, and like I say, I probably watched the first 50 minutes and then watched the second, you know, then watched the hour. And yeah, you know, if I'd have watched this in one go, it would have been way more of a chore for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So what would your recommendation be for this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've got a kid that's, you know, maybe 10 or 12 and they like horror and like these sorts of games, then you can watch it with them and you'll have an all right time. This isn't dreadful. If you're an adult horror fan that isn't going to be watching it with a child, then, you know, you can go watch adult horror movies and have a better time.
Yeah, I completely agree. I wouldn't recommend this from my own point of view, because I did not enjoy it at all, and I would assume that that kids would like it, but I don't know that enough. But yeah, well said. It's just a weird one. Like even though I should have known this, because now that I've seen the film, I'm like, oh yeah, of course. Like that, there's a reason why I haven't played these games for the last decade, and I'm a huge horror game fan, because I know this franchise isn't for me, you know, and I stick to my wheelhouse. But yeah, I don't know why I thought the film would be different. But they delivered, I think, on what they needed to do, and clearly the box office is showing that. So I'm sure we're going to have 35 Nights at Freddy's films in the next decade. So look forward to that.
I can't wait.
We won't be talking about them, so someone else can. Yeah, that was our discussion on Five Nights at Freddy's. We'll take a quick break, and we will be right back. So yeah, to finish us off this week, bit of television that happened in the past week, we need to discuss the fourth episode of Chucky season 3, which unfortunately is the sort of mid-season finale, as it were. So we don't know when we're going to see the continuation of this story. And of course, full spoilers, as always, for our TV chats. But yeah, I thought this was like... absolutely sensational. I think this is probably my favorite episode of Chucky to date out of all the seasons. I think it's everything I wanted the show to be. Like, there wasn't a single wasted scene. It was 45 minutes that was over in a blink of an eye. Like, the pace was almost too quick.
When we got to, like, there was a bit when we had about 2 minutes left, and I was like, how the fuck are we only got 2 minutes left?
Yeah, when the president was walking after Chucky,
yeah,
it's like, are we going to get him killing the president? Like, yeah. That was how I thought it was going to end. And I feel like if they'd have been more mindful of this being... because it doesn't feel like one. Like, that would be the only downside. It just felt like I say, my favorite episode of the show so far. But it feels like, oh, man, can't wait to watch it next week. Like, that was my feeling. And then you have to remember, like, you can't do that. But, like,
I was so aware of that as well, which is upsetting.
It was what I wanted. Like, the last two episodes were amazing, but we said it was... I always found it disjointed that they kind of keep these stories separate for no real reason. And I get that they've cut the fat, as it were, because there's a lot less loose threads. Like, it is only just Jennifer in jail right now, going on side by side with the White House stuff with the teens and Chucky.
Yes, we didn't see Mika, did we?
No, we didn't see Mika, and, like, Caroline still hasn't come back into it yet, and stuff like that. And, like, Andy was obviously not in this in any form.
Dream sequence.
Yeah, last week, yeah.
In the entire series so far,
exactly,
yeah.
So it's like, it is smaller, just having these two stories going on, but they're so good, and
yeah,
it really captured everything I love about the show, because, like, all the Jennifer stuff was superb. Like, the comedy was landing, the kill that she did, the voodoo doll kill, was equal parts hilarious, but also one of the most grotesque things I've seen all year. When her face comes out of that boiling water, that is one of the coolest effects I've ever seen of, like, a melted face. So cool.
It's gone to Ash vs. Evil Dead. Like, yeah. that's what it reminded me of, like, that morgue scene.
Yes, yeah, it was. So that was amazing. But then what we got, like, the main crux of the story, which has been building, I've been enjoying it more week after week. This was perfect for me. It all made sense. Like, why we're in the White House, getting the kids in there, which was something that we've talked about, like, how are they going to do it? And it was such a hilarious thing of just, yeah. Yeah, it's just a party, like, and you're invited. Was great. I love, like, when
this
it's
going to be a bit slutty on Instagram, and the president's son's going to slide into your DMs.
Exactly, yeah. It's tried and tested.
Like,
the fact that all three of them were dressed as different good guy dolls was amazing.
I popped so hard when they came out of the car.
like Devin looks so stupid in his, like, little builder outfit. I loved it so much. So yeah, that was just amazing. And then Chucky, like, I think this was the best Chucky we've had in so long. Like, he's doing stuff, like, him with the little mask, like, him in an outfit is always gold. I love it. But we get to see him walk loads in this one, and I always love seeing that, like, real puppetry. It just always sells it as a doll so much better. The chandelier kill was incredible, and when we see the little cut to him, like, chuckling away as he's unscrewing the nuts, it's so good. Like,
reminded me of Dobby.
Yeah, it was everything about this. This is what I love about Chucky. This had great humor, great kills. It was like a great continuation of the story. Like, Jennifer Tilly just smashing it as always, and the teens all have an interesting stuff to do. Loved it easily. Yeah, easily my favorite of this bunch. But I genuinely think it was my favorite overall, because it had everything. It had drama, it had comedy, and it had unbelievable kills. And, like, the production value, like, they showed so much of the White House, from the exterior to all the inside, with all the costuming, all the camera work. Like, this felt bigger. Like, when you think about how many episodes we had, like, at least three episodes last season where we were just stuck in that one place that was just
one of them. We were just stuck in, like, a fucking chapel for, like, the whole episode.
It was so boring to look at, whereas everything about this is exciting and Chucky to me. So yeah, I could not have loved this anymore.
This episode pissed me off, because I was like, how is it this good? Where I'm like, how are you even making them at this point?
Yeah.
Let alone you're filming, you know, you're set your location in the White House. You know, you're getting these fun cameos from people. It's like, how... Yeah, I just don't understand how it's getting made. Mm. You know, when Keenan popped up last week, I lost my mind. And I just don't get it. And it's gone back into this fantastic, you know, just continuation of the story. And also I was like, man, when I'm watching it, I'm like, I'm as obsessed with Jennifer Tilly as Don Mancini is, like, when I'm watching it. Where I'm like, she's just fantastic in every way.
Mm.
Like, she's terrifying. She's hilarious. She's hot. Like, it's just everything where I'm watching it. And I'm like, I don't understand why she's not in more things.
Yeah.
But then I realized that, like, I'm not sure whether she's acting at this point.
That's the thing. Like, what I love is that there are so many layers to it at this point that, like, I get lost myself when she's talking to people and she's, like, correcting them on her name and stuff. And, yeah, like, I loved when she's talking to that woman that she kills with the voodoo doll and she's like, you know, I loved you in this film. And she's like, oh, no, that was my sister that I killed. And then you're like, oh, yeah, like, she killed her sister, but it wasn't actually her sister because this is now Tiffany. Like, it's just insane. I love it so much.
Yeah. Well, and I love that we're in the joke as well. Mm, that's the thing. Like, I can't, like, this conversation is for such a few people because if you've not watched Chucky, like, all movies and then the two seasons beforehand to get into season three, like, don't bother.
Yeah,
like, you know if you start season three of Chucky and you because we've been talking about it the last few weeks, you're out of your mind.
Mm.
Like, because that's, you know, you just can't do it, and so it's for such a niche group of people, and yet they're delivering such killer content. So I'm so happy with it.
I would assume that's why they do that, the whole, like, they keep it separate for a little while because they try and hook new viewers with just a brand new story,
which is hilarious.
It is hilarious because then it's like, okay, well, what about episode three?
Yeah.
Like, because those people are gone. Like, so if we already know this is such a niche thing, we already know who you're making it for. Just double down. And that's what this episode to me was like, you need to know everything about these characters. And if you don't, see you later. And if you're in like we are, you're going to get so much good shit. I forgot the whole, I love this storyline with Chucky as well.
Yeah.
Him aging.
And Nembala, like, you know.
Yeah.
Them. Like, it's fantastic.
That is one of the coolest new Chucky dolls we've seen. Because they had ideas, shall we say, in the last season about different Chucky dolls, and I don't think any of them landed for us, where we were like, these are just stupid. But the idea of this aging Chucky doll is
Phantom of the Opera Chucky doll.
It's so good. I need one. I absolutely need one.
It is the best Chucky we've seen since Bride of Chucky.
Mm.
You know, where it's like, yeah, you know, so unique. And like, last season when we had like buff Chucky for ages.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was just dumb. Whereas this it's fantastic with a great story point. And yeah, I'm really excited to see where this whole kind of Dembala and him aging and everything kind of does kind of go. And like, and then Jennifer with her just voodooing people and now having a bunch of zombie prison guards that are going to just walk her out of the gates. Like, that's fantastic as well. Like, it really did end on such a high, and the only downer is that we just know now we have to wait an obscene amount of time, possibly. Like,
as long as we get it. Like, I don't know what will happen if, like, I mean, I couldn't think of a stronger point for them to end. But yeah, if something happens, heaven forbid, for any a multitude of different reasons, and it means they can't continue it, I'll be so devastated because they are on fire right now, and they are producing on the level of season one, and they could easily eclipse it because I think now they've really. These storylines just work. Like, I was so, I mean, we've heard it on this conversation, like, I was so unsure on that first episode, and how much that's completely turned around, where I'm like, this is the best scenario we've seen Chucky in years. And they've also stripped it back, having, we've only got one Chucky right now, which I think is a major thing. Like, he feels like our Chucky again, and it feels like an actual story of, shit, like, there's a ticking clock here. Like, I need to kill these people, otherwise I'm done for and this is all over. And like, it hasn't felt like that for a while. It's felt a bit too easy to just be like, yeah, you can just always make a trillion Chucky dolls at this point.
Well, yeah, and it's like Tiff, you know, Tiff is in Jennifer's body and she is on death row.
Yeah, I love that. It's so cool.
It's great. Like, there's so many parts of it. It really is great. The only thing that also annoys me is I just keep looking at that Arrow set now. Yeah. I'm like, I want that, and then I want them. Then I want Arrow to do the Chucky TV complete set when this is all said and done. But I don't know whether it ever will be, because I think this is just a forever thing now.
I hope so. I hope so too. It's been a joy.
The only other thing I was going to mention was I did catch myself up on American Horror Story.
Is it over now? Or?
No, we're on episode 5.
Right.
That's out right now, I believe. And it's grown on me a bit. Like, it's slow, and it doesn't have like this amazing horror in every episode. But it is, because I think it might even have a break now, I think. I'm not sure whether that's got the same problem as...
Yes, it is split into 2 parts.
Yeah, so I think that's it now as well. And it's like, it's good, and it's been building up with the odd thing, and it is interesting. And also because Emma Roberts is the lead, and I just like... I really like her. Like, she is definitely carrying the show for me.
Don't get me to watch it.
Where, like... You know, just seeing her is great, but I wish it was a better story. But then, but it has just grown on me these last couple of episodes, where I'm like, oh, okay, I know what American Horror Story is now. Where it's like, it isn't this really crazy. You know, I think back of some of them earlier seasons, and just like some of the stuff that was in the episodes, and like the cool Halloween episodes, and all of that. It's like that's gone now, and it's like, yeah. Now we have a 10-episode TV show that probably should be 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. And will you get a good story from it? Let's see. And like, this one is interesting and is building in different ways. It's definitely not as sour as last season, but it's still nowhere near the highs that it needs to be. And in particular with what we've had TV this year, you know, when we're talking about little stuff like Chucky that is just like killing it, we're talking about, well, we haven't talked about it, but you know, Creepshow that was delivering what it, you know, what it says on the tin, really. You know, it delivers more Creepshow, maybe not to the level we had before, but it's still doing what it, you know, says it want, you know, what its MO is. And then, you know, we've had these two just absolute killer horror TV shows this year. It's like, yeah, American Horror Story has been kind of, you know, left very much on the back burner.
Yeah, I had seen that it stopped there, and so that's why I'd assumed that it just finished. And so now seeing that it's obviously split into 2 parts. I'm guessing like Chucky, but because like I don't know if I'm guessing the story isn't over.
If there had been an episode next week, you know, it's just a continuation.
Because obviously it is a bit confusing with that, because they have had like split seasons before, so that is why it is a bit confusing. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm guessing this is not the case.
Full season, of the story with Emma Roberts.
So I wonder when that's going to be back. It's so weird, like what a time we live in where these shows are just getting like stopped.
Did I tell you what the synopsis is of this one?
Yeah, I vaguely know about it. Yeah,
yeah, like it, and it is interesting.
The cast definitely was like had me intrigued.
Yeah,
where I might watch it at some point, but especially now knowing that it's not even all out, I'm not touching this with a barge pole until it's well and truly all out there. Good stuff. That is it for another week. We've got a few things on the back burner. We've got that new Hell House movie, which would be nice to see on the old Shudder. So I'm sure we'll get to that. Like you just mentioned, we've got Creepshow as well. We might have to just squeeze that in at some point. Good stuff to talk about. The Halloween season always drips into November, which is always nice. That was episode 369. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone.
Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. And how could I start that?